So today we are studying Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 2, text number 70. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Apuryamanam Achala Prashtishtam Pratishtam Samudram Apa Pravishanti Yadvat Tadvat Kama Yam Pravishanti Sarve Sa Shantim Apnoti Nakama Kami Apuryamanam Achala Pratishtam Apuryamanam Achala Pratishtam Samudramapa Pravishanti Yadvat Samudramapa Pravishanti Yadvat Tadvat Kamayang Pravishanti Sarve Tadvat Kamayang Pravishanti Sarve Shashantamapnoti Nakamakami Shashantamapnoti Nakamakami. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. Purport. Although the vast ocean is always filled with water, it is always, especially during the rainy season, being filled with much more water. But the ocean remains the same, steady. It is not agitated, nor does it cross beyond the limit of its brink. That is also true of a person fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one has the material body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires because of his fullness. A Krishna conscious man is not in need of anything because the Lord fulfills all his material necessities. Therefore, he is like the ocean, always full in himself. Desires may come to him like the waters of the rivers that flow into the ocean, but he is steady in his activities, and he is not even slightly disturbed by desires for sense gratification. That is the point, that is the proof of a Krishna-conscious man, one who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. Because he remains satisfied in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he can remain steady like the ocean, and therefore enjoy full peace. Others, however, who want to fulfill the desires even up to the limit of liberation, or to speak of material success, never attain peace. The fruitive workers, the salvationists, and also the yogis who are after mystic powers are all unhappy because of unfulfilled desires. But the person in Krishna consciousness is happy in the service of the Lord, and he has no desires to be fulfilled. In fact, he does not even desire liberation from the so-called material bondage. The devotees of Krishna have no material desires, therefore they are in perfect peace. This purport is truly amazing. For example, the Krishna conscious man has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. What does that mean? The desires are there, but yet he's not inclined to fulfill the desires. You see, there are so many desires. Desires of the tongue, desires of the genitals, desires of the false ego, you see. So many desires of them. The desires are there. As long as you have a material body, Prabhupada is pointing out. These desires are natural. But a devotee is not inclined to satisfy them, you see. Just like the itch is there, but he doesn't want to scratch it. He has no inclination to scratch it, even though the desire, the itch is there, he doesn't want to scratch, doesn't feel like scratching him. That's one point. Another point is this. The ocean is filled up. The devotee's heart is fully satisfied just by serving Krishna. He has no unfulfilled desires, you see. In other words, as long as you have an unfulfilled desire, you can't be happy. Even the yogis and the jnanis, they have unfulfilled desires. They want to enter Brahman, you see. But a devotee, he's the only person who can be truly happy, because he has no desires. He's completely satisfied, wherever his position is, it doesn't matter. He's completely satisfied because he's engaged in devotional service. That devotional service fully satisfies him. Doesn't matter what position. It's not that I have to have another position within ISKCON. I need to be a cook instead of a pujari, or a pujari instead of a cook. He has an unfulfilled desire to be a temple president or a GBC. You see, it does. These things aren't there. Just serving Krishna alone is. That's it. As long as I'm serving Krishna. Prabhupada said a devotee, all he needs is a place to lie down at night, and it's a little prasadam and service to do, and he's completely satisfied and happy. He doesn't need anything else. A place to lie down and sleep at night, some prasadam to eat, and service. That's, and he's fully, completely satisfied. He has no other needs. So this is a very nice point. And then Prabhupada makes this point we often hear. He doesn't even desire liberation. And then Prabhupada says this from so-called material bondage. Why does Prabhupada say so-called material bondage? That means it's not really material bondage. It's only so-called material bondage. In other words, for the person who's engaged in devotional service, there's no such thing as material bondage. It doesn't even exist. It's only so-called material bondage. That's why he doesn't need desire liberation from it, because it's only so-called material bondage. In other words, he's already liberated. You understand? You understand the point? This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 14, text number 8. Tatenukam famsu samikshamano punjana evatma kritang vapakam ridvag bapur vir vedadang namaste jiveta yomukti padesa dayabak. My dear Lord, a person who is constantly awaiting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon him, who goes on suffering the resultant actions of his previous misdeeds, offering you respectful obeisances from the core of his heart, is certainly an eligible candidate for liberation. Indeed, it has become his rightful claim. My dear Lord, a person who constantly awaits your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon him, who goes on offering you respectful obeisances, who goes on suffering the reactions for his previous misdeeds, while offering you respectful obeisances from the core of his heart, is certainly an eligible candidate for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. So a devotee in any position, he's considered a liberated soul, you see. Even if he's suffering reactions from his previous misdeeds, even if he's still suffering karmic reactions, He doesn't think ill of it. He doesn't think, oh, Krishna, why are you doing this to me? I'm your devotee. Why are you punishing me like this? He thinks, no, this is Krishna's mercy. I'm burning off reactions from my past misdeeds. So in this mood, it's called an attitude of gratitude. He has a gratitudinous attitude. He's always feeling grateful at every minute for everything that's happening to him. It can be good, it can be bad, it can be beautiful, it can be ugly, it doesn't matter. He's always feeling gratitude that, wow, this is great. Just see how Krishna's kind to me. You see, that's his mood. So he's a liberated soul, even in all conditions of this material existence, an aging, sickly body that we all, you know, experiencing. We're healthy, we're sick. We're getting older and moving towards death. But that doesn't faze a devotee. He's not affected by these things because he knows it's just one, I've just had millions of bodies. This is just another change of body. It's not a big deal. And because I'm engaging in Krishna's service, this is my last material body. I'm going back to my original spiritual body that doesn't fall asleep in Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita class. You see? So in this way, if we understand what is this wonderful thing called Krishna consciousness and we seriously try to cultivate it, it's not being a member. Krishna consciousness doesn't mean to be a member of an organization. You understand? That I join some cult. That's not. Krishna consciousness means to awaken the dormant loving feelings in your heart for the Supreme Lord. That's what it means. We have a society to help each other to do that, but the real meaning of Krishna consciousness is to awaken the dormant feelings of Krishna, of love for Krishna within your heart. That's what it's all about. It's not being a member of an organization. It's awakening the feelings of love for Krishna within your heart. So perhaps some of you have some questions. I can try to answer them.
Srila Gurudev, but when pure devotee suffers, he still feels some pains, bodily pains and mental pains, but he still feels them. There are some pains.
A devotee still feels pain, yes.
Does he feel, or when he is like completely liberated, he doesn't feel?
Does a liberated soul feel pain? yes, but it's not the same. Just like if you think that you are your car and the car gets in a wreck, then you'll be devastated emotionally. But he realizes it's not me, it's just my car, and it's a different experience, even though the sensation is there for a devotee. The sensation of pain is there as a warning sign, just like in the car when the oil runs low, the little red light comes on to warn you. So pain is actually a warning signal. It's not just a punishment. It's a warning signal to help you take proper care of your body. It's all it is, really. It's nature's red light. Oh, there's something going wrong. You have to take care of this. So, but the pain is there for a devotee because he also has to take care of his body. He has to know, oh, my foot went to sleep. I have to get the circulation going in and again. But for one who's liberated, it's just something happening out there in the external energy. It's not me. I mean, Prabhupada's body was in a very painful condition in the final days. But it's not that he was thinking, oh, I am in great pain. He was experiencing this is out there in the material energy. That's all. In other words, a devotee is situated in the internal energy, not in the external energy. As neophyte devotees, we're still trying to get to that point, you see. We're still identified with the external energy. But by this gradual process of chanting Hare Krishna, following the regulated principles, serving Prabhupada's mission, following your authority, following your spiritual master, by this gradual process of purification, slowly, 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 your focus will move from the external energy to the internal energy. That's what it is, you see. In the beginning, we're completely absorbed in the external energy. the gross and subtle aspects of it. The gross aspect is the material body. The subtle aspect is the mind, intelligence, and false ego. These are both external energy. But as you gradually engage in this process, chanting 16 rounds every day, avoiding illicit sex, meat-eating intoxication, gambling, joining in the kirtan, doing service for Prabhupada's mission, serving Vaishnavas, serving Guru, in this way, by taking up these activities, and there's a gradual metamorphosis, gradually that tendency to be sleepy in Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita class, goes away, and one becomes alert by practice and training, you see. See, as long as we identify with the body, we have a tendency to be pulled into the tamaguna. But the more you become situated on the transcendental platform beyond the material body, then the tamaguna cannot affect. Just like, consider Parikshit Maharaj, how long he sat in the Bhagavatam class. 7 days. 7 times 24, that's a long time. That's 20 times 7, 140 plus, what's that, 168 hours, Bhagavatam class, 24 times 7, isn't it 268, something like that, 168 hours, can you imagine, he sat in the Bhagavatam class completely alert, Bhagavatam class for 168 hours. And be completely alive, and oh wow, this is the sweetest nectar. Just want to drink it in deeper, 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 you see. So, whether it's Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, it's the same thing. It's Krishna. Krishna in the form of transcendental sound vibration. The fact is, as neophyte devotees, we get sleepy in the class sometimes. Sometimes we don't even want to come to the class, we just want to stay in bed, you see. This is our neophyte tendency. If you're getting sleepy, stand up. That's the key. Yeah, stand up. And if you're still sleepy, dance back and forth. And if you're still sleepy after that, go back to the ashram and go to sleep. So in this way, you see, one has to conquer over the lower self by the higher self. By using your intelligence, by following the orders of Guru, by following the instructions given by Prabhupada, then one can conquer over the modes of nature. It's a battle. I mean, it's a real battle. We've been in the grip of the three modes of material nature since time immemorial. We're talking about millions and billions and trillions and quadrillions and quintillions and sextillions and octillions and zillions of lifetimes. We've been completely caught up in the three modes of material nature. Totally a slave of tamagun, rajagun, sattvagun. Can you imagine? Complete slaves. But if we can take this one lifetime and follow the instructions given by Srila Prabhupada, coming down through our Guru Maharaj, coming through our temple authorities, if we can give this one lifetime, you see, to very seriously apply ourselves to these principles, then no more material birth we have to take. At the end of this lifetime, we'll go to sleep and wake up with Krishna. Radharani will be there, Nanda Maharaj, Mother Jasoda, Brahmana who likes the ladus, Madhu Mangal will be there popping ladus. You see, maybe you can convince him to let you have one of his ladu stash. He also does a thing with his arms, I'm not going to imitate it. Makes a funny sound under his armpits. So all kinds of amazing pastimes are there, but the cowherd boys, the cowherd girls, and it's all waiting for us. Now we're sitting here at the Vilnius airport. Someday we'll be sitting in the bank of the Jamuna in Goloka Vrindavan, remembering this day we were here in Vilnius at the airport. So, you just have to qualify yourself to give up all these nonsense material desires, even if they're there, like we read in the purport today. Even the desires are there, you just don't act on them. A pretty girl may walk by and you may go, but you say, nope, Krishna, I've given up trying to enjoy pretty women now. Now I just want to be a servant of Krishna, you see. So in this way, you train yourself. Next question? Yeah.
What is the main things about chanting japa? What is the main rules or the main fits?
What are the most important things when chanting japa? Avoid the 10 offenses. Understand that the name is Krishna himself. And when you chant japa, give your full attention. If you are having a meeting with somebody, and you're kind of halfway talking to them and halfway, you know, putting your attention somewhere else, would they be offended? Sure. If you halfway pay attention to your rounds, it's actually offensive. Inattentive japa. So you have to understand, you're personally meeting with Krishna himself. So what kind of attention do you give if you're having a personal meeting with Krishna, you see? So you have to fully absorb yourself, understanding Krishna himself is manifested, and I have to give him the respect that he deserves. In this way, chant Hare Krishna. Next question. Okay, what is that question?
Can we satisfy Krishna through external energy?
Can we satisfy Krishna through the external energy? The external energy is Krishna's energy, and it's meant to be engaged in his service. Just like this airport is the external energy of Krishna. This microphone is the external energy of Krishna. But when you engage the external energy in the service of Krishna, then it becomes internal energy. So we have to work with the external energy, because right now that's where we're at. We're absorbing the external energy. You have to take the external energy and engage it in Krishna's service, and that way it becomes internal energy. Next question.
How disciple should act? Should he wait for... How aspiring disciple should act? Should he wait until Gurudev will ask him to become initiated? Should he wait until his seniors will recommend him? Or he should ask if he is ready, if he can take initiation?
So when should one get initiated? Should you ask your authorities, can you recommend me? Should you just passively wait for your authorities to recommend you, or for your spiritual master to encourage you? What should be the protocol? Actually, one should be very enthusiastic. You should do whatever it takes to get initiated as soon as possible, really. Because Rupa Goswami says, Dao Gura Shvayam, the first step on the path of self-realization is to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. So one should be very enthusiastic. I remember my godbrother, Dhananjaya Prabhu. The very first lecture that Dhananjaya Prabhu attended, he said, when Papa said, are there any questions? He raised his hand. He said, when can I get initiated? That was the first question he had. So that was just, he was brand new. He just heard Prabhupada for the first time immediately. When can I get initiated? So that enthusiasm is very good. You can ask your authorities, when will you recommend me? Am I doing okay? Am I am I properly engaged now to be recommended? And one should be very enthusiastic in that way. The spiritual master's position is, at least in my case, I'm very, very happy to initiate you as soon as your authorities recommend you. So you should try to get that recommendation as soon as possible. That's called enthusiasm. Utsahan nishtayad dariyat. Rupa Goswami says, if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, you must be enthusiastic. So one should be very enthusiastic to get initiated. And once initiated, be very, very enthusiastic to always please my spiritual master. Okay, next question.
Sometimes some not sinful material desires become very strong. For example, I want to go for a walk. And it's so strong that... So what to do in this case? You just go for a walk and forget it, or...
If one has a strong desire to go for a walk, actually, Prabhupada took a walk every day. A walk is actually very good for the health. There's nothing wrong with taking a walk to keep one's body fit. Prabhupada took a walk for health. Every day, 1 hour walk he would take. He would go out for 1 hour, half hour, and then 1.5 hour back. So, that's not a bad thing, want to take a walk. But if you want to go out and enjoy the scenery, or something like that, that's not very good. Yes, I want to go and check out this nice scenery. Prabhupada meant for the health. He didn't go to enjoy some scenery. Of course, it's not that you... Of course, you look at the scenery along the way. It's not that he would see... Prabhupada would see Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. He would observe things while he was walking. It's not that he was... You know, to put some blinders on, because you're not supposed to see the material energy. What's that? Yeah, he didn't just go whimsically. It was part of his daily schedule. Not that, oh, I feel a whim now, and I have to go for a walk immediately. Prabhupada never acted whimsically. And just like prasadam, one is not meant to whimsically just pop prasadam whenever you feel like taking prasadam. One should take it regulated times. Otherwise, it becomes service to the tongue instead of service to Krishna. Whenever I feel like prasadam, I just pop some prasadam in my mouth, you see. Even though it's prasadam, still we should be regulated when we take prasadam. We have a regulated time, we take a regulated time. That helps us to overcome this tendency to be the enjoyer and to stay in the mood of being the servant. So if one feels he would like to take a walk, then to have a regulated time when you take a walk every day is very good.
So, what is better? If there is some material desires, it is better to spiritualize it and use it for Krishna, or just ignore it?
If it's better to, when you have a material desire, to spiritualize it and use it for Krishna, or is it better to ignore it? Well, it depends on what it is. The general principle is it's better to ignore it and just do your duty. Whatever your duty is, stick to your duty. That's the ideal thing. Someone may have a desire to get married, for example, and that can be allowed in Krishna consciousness. But that's a concession. It's better if one can remain brahmachari, you see. We can facilitate one if he wants to get married, and many men do want to do that. So we facilitate them. But ideally, if one can just remain strict brahmachari the whole life, that is the ideal thing. So we can, when these material desires can be facilitated, but it's better not to, because your advancement will be much, if one can peacefully remain fixed simply in doing one's duty as a disciple and as a preacher, and as a, you know, whatever service you're given in ISKCON, if you can just stay fixed in that, that's the ideal position, and one should do that if one can do that. Any other questions?
Yeah. What is the best way to engage others? It is according their duty, according their nature, or not?
So what should the manager think? Should he engage them according to their nature, or just say, okay, here's the duties, and everybody just do your duty? The manager, the devotees should think, let me do whatever my manager engages me in doing. Let me be fully surrendered to do whatever my manager asks me to do. My temple president, whatever he asks me to do, let me be fully surrendered to that. That's what the devotees should think. And the temple president should think, how can I best engage everybody according to their propensity? So it's easy, everybody is enlivened in their service, and it's easier to inspire them. If somebody loves cooking, well, let him cook. Somebody likes to do puja, let him do puja. If somebody likes to do book distribution, let him do book distribution. See, that makes your management easier. If you find a way to facilitate everybody according to what they like to do for Krishna, then it makes management much like Vaikuntha management. But some, at the same time, devotees have to be willing to do the needful. I may not feel like going on book distribution during the marathon, but still I surrendered because Prabhupada wants as many devotees to go on book distribution as possible, especially during the marathon. So, devotees should be in the mood of duty. And the temple president should try to engage them according to their propensity, much as possible. But he has to do his duty also. He has a duty to distribute, to see the books are going out, so he has to engage people sometimes against their propensity and let them learn a new propensity, book distribution. I think you had a question, Rupanuga Prabhu.
Okay, what was his question?
Stability of sadhana depends on inside desire to give pleasure for Krishna.
But the what of sadhana?
Stability.
Stability. Okay.
Yes. But only external sadhana, if you forget why are you doing it, it's also not very big effect. So how to find proper balance?
If you'll regularly attend classes in the Bhagavatam, either sitting in the class or hearing lectures, you know, recorded lectures, and reading, that will help you always understand why you're doing what you're doing. So, the key is you have to regularly hear the Bhagavatam, attend the classes, or read it at home with your family. By studying the books, that will help you understand why you're doing the service. Just like in chemistry, there's the two parts of the course. There's the lecture section, and there's the laboratory section. In the lecture, you understand the theories behind the experiments. In the laboratory, you actually do the experiments. So our practical devotional activities, that's the laboratory of devotional service. But you have to have a good theoretical understanding. What is bhakti? Who am I? Who is Krishna? Why am I doing this? I'm trying to revive my lost loving relationship with Krishna. You have to have a very good philosophical vision. It's called Shastra Chakshus, one who sees through the eyes of Scripture. So if you're losing the focus of why you're doing it, you're not reading enough. You're not hearing enough Krishna conscious philosophy. So you need to increase your hearing of philosophy, your reading of the books, playing lectures while you're driving. You know, you can hear when you're washing the dishes, you can hear recorded lectures. So in this way, you have to always see through the eyes of Scripture, and then you'll know exactly why you're doing what you're doing at every minute. Okay, so we'll stop here. And we thank you all very much for coming out to the airport today to see us off as we head out to the U.S. via our stop in Helsinki. So we're very happy you've all come to the airport today, and may Krishna bless you all for your wonderful dedication to this movement. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.
Sri Krishna Sankarsana Dasa Dikari Maharaja ki jai.